Thank you for tuning in to the Appelman Law Firm podcast series, where we'll be taking an in-depth look at the laws, consequences, and your rights when it comes to criminal charges in Minnesota. I'm your host, Ryan McGinty, and today I'm joined by Avery Appelman, criminal trial lawyer and founder of Appelman Law Firm. Avery's been practicing criminal defense in Minnesota for the past 20 years, primarily in the field of DWI. Avery, thanks so much for joining us. I'm going to jump right in with a general question. What is the difference between DWI and DUI in the state of Minnesota?
You know, Ryan, that's a good question. People routinely ask me what the difference between DUI and DWI is, and I'm left explaining that there really is no difference. In Minnesota, we have a DWI statute. That means driving while impaired. There are really two ways of being charged with a DWI in Minnesota. The first is where there's a breath, blood, or urine test that's over the legal limit. Our legal limit in Minnesota is greater than 0.08. The other way of being charged with a driving while impaired, or DWI, violation in Minnesota is where there's facts and circumstances to believe that the person is impaired and shouldn't be driving. The police officer makes a conclusion based upon all of the facts and circumstances that they know and that they have observed to make the conclusion that the person is impaired.
Could you briefly explain the varying degrees of DWI and the corresponding penalties that go along with each degree?
You know, Ryan, there are four degrees of DWI in Minnesota, all the way from a fourth degree misdemeanor DWI to a first degree felony. Each degree has its own set specific type of punishment and consequence. A fourth degree DWI, a misdemeanor in Minnesota, is punishable by up to 90 days in jail and a $1,000 fine. Second and third degree DWIs are gross misdemeanors, punishable by up to a year in jail and a $3,000 fine. And lastly, the felony level DWI, you can be looking at prison time. How do we get to these degrees? Minnesota has an enhanceable DWI statute. What that means is that based upon the presence of any aggravating factors, DWIs are made more serious. Some aggravating factors are a refusal to submit to chemical testing, a blood alcohol concentration test, that's a breath, blood, or urine test, Ryan, greater than 0.20, driving with a child under the age of 16 or under in your vehicle at the time that you were over the legal limit or driving while impaired. Those are the aggravating factors. The presence of these aggravating factors would make a determination as to whether a DWI is a second degree or a third degree. A third degree DWI has a presence of one aggravating factor, and a second degree DWI has the presence of two aggravating factors. And you know, Ryan, the most common aggravating factor that we know of and that I see routinely is a prior DWI within the last 10 years. And that leads me to, how do we get to a first degree DWI? A first degree DWI can only be charged if the current DWI violation is your fourth offense within the last 10 years.
What is physical control? And can you give us an example?
What's physical control? You know, I hear that all the time. In Minnesota, our driving while impaired, our DWI statute, is much broader than a police officer behind a motorist watching them drive. Our law prohibits driving, operating, or being in physical control of a motor vehicle while impaired. What's physical control? Well, physical control is, the legal definition of it is, at least Ryan, is when the vehicle can be placed under such immediate control so as to pose a risk of danger to other motorists due to that driver's physical or impaired condition. What does that mean? Well, it means whatever the police officer at the scene wants it to mean. So we have people who realize, oh my God, I'm intoxicated, I shouldn't be driving. They pull over to the side of the road. It's winter, it's cold in Minnesota, Ryan. You know what I'm saying? And so what happens is that these motorists leave the car running. They put the seat back. They have no intention of driving anymore. And the next thing you know, an hour later or so, the police officer's knocking on a snow-covered car, and this impaired driver is woken up by the police officer. Keys are in the ignition. Car is running, and this driver is impaired. That's physical control.
Can you tell us about a specific physical control case that you have handled in the past?
All right, Ryan, you know, that's a really good question. What is the most unique physical control case that I've ever seen, and how have I helped them? Well, here's the deal. I represented a young lady back in, I don't know, early 2000s, when she was in an intimate situation with her boyfriend in her car, parked in a lawful parking spot in front of his townhome. They were in a precarious, promiscuous kind of situation, if you get what I'm saying. And the police officers came up, and when they knocked on the window, the fog-covered window, he rolled over, leaving her in the fully extended pushed-back driver's seat. Car was running. It was cold outside. I believe this happened in January. And because she was in the driver's seat at the time, the police officer said that she was in physical control and charged her with driving under the influence. Well, we got involved and proved that there was no way that she was actually in physical control of the motor vehicle. The two of them were having sex. They were not engaged in any affirmative driving conduct, and the judge reinstated her driving privileges, and the prosecutor dismissed her charges.
What advice do you have for someone who is pulled over for drunk driving? In other words, what should you do and what should you not do if pulled over for DWI?
You know, I am routinely asked at parties, at gatherings, you know, hey, listen, I'm stopped, I've been drinking, what should I do? What shouldn't I do? Well, let's first start off with what you shouldn't do. You shouldn't talk to the police about where you've been. You shouldn't make any admissions about drinking. You shouldn't tell the police officers who you were with that night. You shouldn't submit to field sobriety tests. Those are the stupid human tricks that we know. The stand on one leg, the counting backwards, the doing the alphabet, the having the pen in your eyes and looking side to side. You don't have to submit to any of those tests. You have the right to remain silent. You have the right to not participate in those tests. And I encourage people who are listening to this podcast that if you're stopped after drinking and driving, make no statements, don't talk to the police, and do not do field sobriety tests. The only thing that that does is give the police evidence of your intoxication. Now, what do I do? I'm thinking that I'm on the line. Maybe I submit to this field preliminary breath test. We call that the PBT, Ryan. That's the breath test at the scene. And police officers use that as a screening device to make a decision as to whether to arrest somebody for a DWI or not. Listen, that's a test that police officers, prosecutors, and judges and probation officers all will use to make determinations about someone's guilt or innocence at a later time. It's better to not have a test at the scene. If you get arrested, you are obligated to take a test at the station, and that would be a breath, blood, or urine test. So, let's review what you don't do at the scene. You don't make any statements to the police. You don't perform field sobriety tests, and you certainly do not take the preliminary breath test. Now, the alternative is, what should I do? Well, you should always be driving with your driver's license, insurance, and registration in your car. That makes things easy for the police officer. They're going to be asking you for that information. Having it readily available will prevent the police officer from seeing you stumble around trying to locate these documents. Have them ready by the time the police officer comes to the side of your car. If they ask you for identification, your name, date of birth, you can provide that to them. If they ask you if you've been drinking, you don't respond to that question. In addition, if they ask you to get out of your car, you should comply with all of their requests. Cooperate with the police officers. Not cooperating with them, getting upset, getting angry, is only going to lead to bigger problems. If they ask you to take field sobriety tests, you politely refuse. If they arrest you, you comply. Once you're going down to the police station, the police officers will read you a document advising you of your right to contact a lawyer. Accept that right and affirmatively tell them you want to speak with the lawyers at the Appleman Law Firm. You can reach us at 1-800-DIALDWI. That's 1-800-DIALDWI. Our criminal trial lawyers are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you get in trouble, we're here to help. So, once you're arrested, you ask to speak with us. We will then give you some additional information. And the most important piece of information, Ryan, is that you have to submit to a chemical test at the police station or at the hospital. And that means a blood, breath, or urine test approved by the state that will then be determinative of your blood alcohol concentration. Now, after you submit to that test, you have the right to have an additional blood, breath, or urine test at your own cost. We may very well suggest at the time that you should get that test. And we have resource partners like Accurate Testing to help our clients in these times. For instance, if you are at 0.09 on the breath test, it might be advisable for you to get that additional test that might demonstrate that the state's test is inaccurate and unreliable. If you have gastroesophageal reflux and you take a breath test and you're 0.17, getting a urine test may very well prove the state's test inaccurate and unreliable. Call us in these situations. We're always willing to talk. It doesn't cost you anything to speak with us.
Why do you need a defense attorney if you've been charged with a DWI? In other words, why hire a defense attorney when you can just get the public defender for free?
You know, Ryan, I know that people have been listening to this for a little bit, and I appreciate their time. And I hear a lot from potential clients and people that are concerned about people who have been charged with a DWI. Do I need a defense lawyer? Why do I need a defense lawyer? You know, aren't there so many DWIs? Aren't these situations pretty standardized? And what I'll tell you is this. DWIs aren't like speeding tickets, Ryan. They are misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, and felony-level offenses. People are required to go to court, talk to probation officers, talk to prosecutors, and stand before a judge before their cases can be resolved. I ask the people that are listening to this, you know, how comfortable will you feel if you have to go to court by yourself? How comfortable will you feel if you have to stand in front of the judge by yourself? How do you know if your case is winnable, if there's a loophole, if there's a technical violation that could help you win your case? With both the criminal and civil aspects of this, of the DWI in Minnesota, it's a highly complex area of the criminal law that requires advice, counsel, and guidance. We have strategies in place that have been time-tested, Ryan. I've been doing this for almost 20 years. And these strategies that I've been using always lead to favorable results. We call our clients the night before every court appearance. We explain to them everything that's going on. We make sure that our clients are aware of all of the facts and circumstances necessary so that they can make decisions that affect their lives. Having a lawyer in connection with a criminal case is not just about the result, which I take for granted, Ryan, that we get favorable results all the time because we seek those out. But it's about how do we service our client, take them from the initial meeting to the most favorable resolution. How do we guide them, counsel them, treat them so that they have less anxiety, less fear, and they experience a satisfactory situation going through the criminal process. I thank you for your time, Ryan, and I've enjoyed this podcast.
Well, Avery, thanks again for taking the time to talk with me today about DWI in Minnesota. We really appreciate it.
Well, I hope that this has been informative to people, Ryan. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate anybody out there listening to this. And if there's ever any questions, you can always reach us at 952-224-2277, or you can visit us up on the web at www.aacriminallaw.com. In addition, we have a great blog. Just go ahead and do a Google search for the Appleman Law Firm blog, and you'll be more than happy to locate that. Anyway, I've had a good time doing this. I think it's been pretty informative, and if people have any questions, we're always available. Reach us on the web. Look for us anytime, day or night. Thank you very much.